Welcome to the first In the Blues Tone podcast, and I've thought about doing this for quite some time. I always liked the idea of radio when I was younger. I thought that's maybe where I wanted to go when I was a kid. I didn't know in what capacity. I thought I would do a podcast relating to tone and also stream it on YouTube as well. So this podcast is obviously available via iTunes for free. You can listen to it on there. Now, I've wanted to cover a couple of different topics on the first one and then get some feedback from all the listeners, either from YouTube or via email or Facebook. So feel free to comment on any of this wherever you may be listening around the world, and also let me know where you are too. That's always cool. The first thing I wanted to cover is Gibson guitars. Now, these are basically like the Chinese Gibson guitars. I'm actually guilty of buying one of these from China quite some time ago. You know, in hindsight, it's pretty hilarious, but the first time that I used it, it worked for about 8 seconds and then it stopped working. I plugged it in, turned it on, I had sound, I played an E chord maybe or something, or maybe an A, and then it just faded out and I had no more sound. So that was my horror story. It cost me, I think, $550 back then, which was probably around $600 or $700 Australian. So I really got quite what we call jibbed. So I got ripped off big time. And it was one of those things where I felt like, you know, maybe it was salvageable. So I took it to a guitar tech that I knew, and he said, you got two options. Either you can flip it on eBay and get rid of it in its condition, or you can use it for firewood. So I ended up taking a pretty huge loss. I think I sold it for about $250 on eBay. And yeah, and the funniest thing was it had no block on the inside of it. So it was literally like a hollow version of an ES-335, which it was unplayable, and it stunk as well. It was absolutely, it just smelt awful. And that was because the varnish didn't have time to air off or anything like that. So it totally smelt bad. And yeah, it just stunk out the house. I ended up, that did go away over time, but you know what? I'll give him credit on one thing. It was packaged really, really good. It was wrapped in bubble wrap, you know, about 30 centimeters or a foot deep on it, all around it, inside a case. And then that case was actually packed with, like, it was taped around the outside with this bright yellow tape. And ever since then, I'll never buy another Gibson or a fake guitar. Let me know, you know, if you've bought one in the past or whether you own one and it's good. I'd love to hear some good stories about that. For me, the only Chinese guitar that I'm going to buy is either an Epiphone, because I know that their quality. The Cork guitars are good as well, but for me personally, the Classic Vibe will be, or the Squire Classic Vibes are as good as they get for their price. And you know what you're buying. So yeah, stay away from some of those Chinese sites. I think they're definitely unique in their approach to building guitars. And they actually asked me for feedback when I complained about it not having a block on the inside. They didn't know what that was. So yeah, I thought that was pretty hilarious. I also get asked a lot about tubes and which tubes should I replace in my amp for this particular sound or that particular sound. And I wanted to have a little bit of a chat about speaker modifications as well as tube modifications. I don't honestly think tubes make that much of a difference. I mean, if they're rattling or they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing, yeah, for sure, swap them out. Just get a set of JJs or something that isn't too expensive that sound great and they're good tubes. I don't think tubes make the biggest difference to amplifiers. I think you're not happy with the tone of the amp if it's too toppy or it doesn't have enough low end and all that kind of stuff. You're much better just changing the speaker. There's so many better speakers out there that will give you what you want rather than changing the tubes. I think sometimes the tube thing goes into a little bit of voodoo. I don't really hear it that much. I understand there's a huge difference between types of tubes, like 6V6 or 6L6 tubes or 12AX7s and EL84s and the way that they sound. But yeah, I really don't think that there's a huge difference if you're getting the same 12AX7s in a different brand and putting them in. I don't think you're going to hear that much of a difference. You can hear some difference, but if you're after a dramatic change to your amplifier, I would definitely suggest just changing the speaker, because for any amp that I've heard that's had that done, it just becomes something else. I've heard it with supersonic amps. You know, every deluxe reverb that has a different speaker sounds completely different to each other. I played 3 deluxe reverbs, all with different speakers, all exactly the same. They sound nothing alike, and they've all got the same tubes. Some are louder than others. It depends on the decibel rating or the dB rating of that particular speaker. So keep that into consideration. One of the most easiest things to change in an amplifier is the speaker in some cases. Sometimes the tubes are easier to swap, but this requires no technical effort. All you need to do is make sure that it's 8 or 16 ohm, like the original speaker that was in there, and the power rating can handle it. So it doesn't matter if you're putting a 100 watt speaker in a 50 watt amp. It doesn't matter if you're putting a 70 watt speaker in a 15 watt amp. It absolutely doesn't matter, as long as the OHM or the ohm is exactly the same. So let me know what you think of this. I'm a huge believer that the speaker makes the biggest difference. And if you've got a good speaker in an amp, it's night and day compared to other speakers in exactly the same amplifier. So let me know what you think. And if you have changed a particular speaker in an amp, then definitely let me know about that as well. One thing I hear a lot of in the blues community, in Australia at least, is it doesn't matter what amp you play, it doesn't matter what guitar you have, you'll sound like you. Now, I absolutely believe that, but not being fussy with your tone is, I don't know, it's like anything. If you're not fussy with certain things in your life, then you're just going to sound average. And you can get a great player on an average amp, and he'll still sound great, but you get a great player on a great amplifier and or pedal combo or guitar combo, he's going to sound even better. And that's not only to the musicians, but to the people in the room. I've heard great guitar players use amps that they're not familiar with, and they struggle. I mean, they still play great, but the tone and their feel is compromised. And I think it's one of those things where being fussy with your sound makes you stand out in a room full of guitar players who sound average. You can have a great tone and not be as strong a guitar player as somebody else, but you'll still sound good. That's just my opinion. I've seen guys that have great chops but terrible tone, and to me, they don't really sound that good. They could sound better. And I don't know if it's just a guitar player thing, so if it is, just let me know. Generally, most guitar players are more critical of other musicians than any other musician would be of any other muso. So you could get a bass player who's a great bass player. He appreciates other great bass players. He appreciates great guitar players or drummers or other musicians. I don't see the bass players getting as hung up on these factors of, well, maybe it's more of an ego thing, but to me, good playing, good tone goes hand in hand, and good tone also motivates you to play better, and it also makes you play in a way that where you feel more free. If you're not happy with your sound or you're just putting up with it, then to me, that's lazy. I don't think settling for second best is a good option a lot of the time, and that's a good thing to take into any part of your life. I think if you want to do something, do it right and find the sound that works for you, and that sound will then become identifiable. I think after a few years of using different amps and different pedals, you'll tend to sound like you through all of these different amplifiers, but what you might hear personally is something better, whereas other guitar players or other musicians might not hear the same thing as what you're hearing. They'll just hear your tone. So that's what it comes down to. Find the tone you like, and you should be able to get that through just about any amplifier or guitar or pedal just by dialing it in, and then you'll get something close to the sound that you really like. I just feel you shouldn't just settle for okay tone. I think if you're a competent guitar player or you're playing a lot, definitely find a sound that's unique to you. And as long as you're happy with it, that's the main thing. So is modding a cheap pedal worth it in the long run? My initial instinct to this is absolutely not. I'm not saying if you've done it, it's a bad choice. But generally, if you're buying a pedal, say under $100 or $70, like the Soul Food's a great example of this. That's a pedal that I would never get modded, and I'll tell you why. A, they don't last very long if you drop them, and B, it's a copy of a better pedal. You might be better off saving up for that better pedal, which is the original, or get another version of the same thing, which might just be better built. Once you start modding these cheaper pedals, if something goes wrong, you're totally screwed. And like I mentioned, these pedals are under warranty. That's for another podcast. But basically, one of the things that I learned early on is you get what you pay for. If you're paying $70 for a pedal and it falls on the ground, it's going to break. It will. I dropped mine for the first time and one of the pots broke and I can't get that part replaced. So definitely think about it. Other pedal manufacturers make a Klon clone with a base, you know, pot already on there. So definitely check out those or go for the original Klon KTR, which is still in production as of November 2014. So it's definitely worth a shot. Let's have a quick chat about pickups and what's happened over the years for me. I was never a fan of the Stratocaster Buzz. I used to play neck pickup a lot because it wasn't as obvious, or I used to play on the in-between positions on a Strat because you wouldn't get that buzz. So I looked for the best noiseless pickup I could find. One of the Strats that I got back in 2004 was the 50th anniversary Strat, which had the SC noiseless pickups, or Sumerian Cobalt, I think it's called. You know, back then they sounded okay. As time went on, I realized, A, they're not as dynamic as pickups on the low end, and B, the high end is totally cut off. Like, it's a very flat, non-responsive sort of sound. Just to put it in visual terms, if the sound scope that I'm trying to explain is a full circle with single coil pickups, then these noiseless pickups are like a half a circle. So they just don't have the lows, they just don't have the highs, the chime, but you don't get the buzz. Now, if you're playing, you know, blues or whatever, they don't quite have the right mojo. So I tried maybe 5 different sets of noiseless pickups over the years. I've tried all the Fender ones, the Hot Noiseless, which were probably my favorite ones, the Jeff Beck ones. I tried the vintage ones. I also tried a set of D. Allen pickups, which, you know, they were good. They just didn't look quite right. And they still had that plasticness about them that I didn't really dig. And the only ones that I found that sound good for me personally were the Joe Barton pickups, which I put in my Telecaster. And they've stayed in there since I put them in. And they don't buzz. They've got a really nice chime about them. They maybe don't have the full scope like I was explaining before, but they're very, very close. But they are different. And if you play high gain music as well, they also work great for that because they don't squeal or do anything weird. So with any noiseless pickup, there's always a compromise on tone. You do lose the buzz and all the problems associated with single coils, but at the same time, you lose the niceness of the single coil. There are new pickups that are coming out, and there's lots of other options than the Fender ones as well. A lot of companies make them. There's the Zex coils. You know, there's a whole bunch of different products coming out from different people. While I haven't used the Zex coil pickups, I hear things in some of the videos that I hear that remind me a little bit of the D. Allen pickups. They still sound good. They absolutely do. But you got to remember, in a live context, you're not really going to hear some of the niceness or the difference between single coils and the noiseless pickups. So, you know, if you're only playing live, you probably won't know any better. If you're doing recording or whatever, then you'll start to notice, wow, there's a huge difference in tone between this and that. And don't get confused between how loud some of the noiseless pickups are and how quiet single coils are. Listen to the lows, listen to the highs, compromise the volume by turning it up and down the amplifier and see which one you like the best. So also let me know what pickups you choose in your guitars when you do change them out to either noiseless or from noiseless to single coils, because I've tried them all and I'd like to find one for me that is less buzzy but still has the full range of EQ and dynamics as the single coils. So search is still on. I'm actually getting a set sent to me from a Canadian company called MJS. So that's MJSCustomPickups.com. I'm looking forward to working with Smitty to find a set of pickups that will work in my guitars for the kind of sound I like. So yeah, let's give it a go, and I'll let you guys know on YouTube with a demo to show you the difference between, you know, what I've got and what I changed. And hopefully these are the winners. They look and sound fantastic. Definitely give this guy a look online at MJS Custom Pickups because, yeah, they look really cool. So let's have a chat now about all the copies of pedals being made and how this affects not only the manufacturers that make and do all the R&D into these things, but also just the market as a whole. Look, there's some pedals I'm guilty of loving that are cheap. The Baiyang X-Drive, for example, is just unbelievably good. It's based on the Tube Screamer circuit, obviously. It's one of those pedals that it sounds and looks great. It's built really well for the price. There's a lot of people that are going out of their way these days to copy pedals. Exactly. I saw this post on Facebook just recently that the Toy Room Guitar Company posted regarding a guy who's made a clone. And this is the post as it stands from the company. Not from the Toy Room Guitar Effects Company, but from the company that are copying the clone. The Clontar Leparth trademark is the most accurate clone ever built, the result of an entire summer spent researching and studying clonology. In putting the Leparth together, my goal was to make not just a clone, but a replica or reproduction. I just don't see why, and it makes me wonder how these guys don't get sued. I always wondered that with guitars and guitar effects. There's so many companies that basically, like the Strat, you've seen a million Strat copies over the years. How do they keep getting made? And how do they not get in trouble? That particular shape, you know, is a trademark. I know the headstock especially is the trademark and they're not supposed to copy those. But yeah, I mean, you look at this particular pedal and it looks exactly like the clone. I don't know why someone would want to copy a pedal down to the aesthetics as well. If you're going to do something, build upon a design. Don't just go out and copy it and then sell it because it's a replica. I don't really understand that. And what I also don't understand is the Clon KTR can still be purchased. And this guy's price isn't that much cheaper. So, you know, where do you draw the line? Do you draw it on price and because this looks like the older Centaur model? Or do you go out and do you buy, you know, even a cheaper version of that, for example, like the Soul Food, which internally is nothing like the Clon? But yeah, I just found it interesting that the term studying clonology was used in a sentence. One of the funniest things I read on this thread on Facebook was that one of the guitar companies said, I'm thinking of majoring in clonology, you know, at university. I just thought that was pretty funny. So yeah, it's interesting to see that, let me put it this way. I'm glad people can sort of have a laugh at this kind of stuff, because copying something down to the aesthetic of it is just, I don't know, man, it's weird. I don't get it. If I was going to build a pedal and sell it, I'd use some of my all-time favorite designs as a template, and then I would make a really unique name. I would make a really unique box for it. There's no way you could charge this much for a copy. I mean, I know a lot of work still goes into it, and he's studied it for the whole summer and all that kind of thing, but, you know, I don't know. It's just a little bit much for me now, the way that this thing's going. So let me know what you guys think about that, and I just think it's insane. So I'm just going to have a quick talk now about my tone shop, and I wanted to thank everybody so much for being a part of it and supporting what I do on YouTube, as well as being supportive of the idea for me to start a web shop. It's been a huge learning curve. I had to do some modifications on the content of the website. I sold out of things pretty quickly, actually, so I've got more stuff coming on the way, and it shouldn't be too long. I'm taking pre-orders on a few of the items, but I'm not here to sell anything to you. I just wanted to let you guys know I had to rework my website model a little bit. One of the companies that was going to allow me to ship really cheap overseas didn't work out. I'm going to definitely look at other options in the future for that. But for now, I've dropped the price on a lot of stuff and shipping is then added. So say, for example, if you're buying the X-Drive, before it would have cost $80. Now it's early $70, somewhere around there. Plus shipping makes it about the same. So while there's a shipping cost, it's basically the price isn't any different. So definitely check out the new price scheme on there now if you are interested in buying anything. The chicken picks have been going out the door, man. I can't thank everybody enough for that. I absolutely love them. It's one of those things, like I said when I first started the shop, was just to sell my own personal gear and to also sell chicken picks. And that's where it steamrolled into ordering a few products. The VFE pedals are also doing really well. I had a customer in Canada and one in the US as well. So thank you so much for that. And if you are in the United States, you can definitely buy direct from me at any time with any of those VFE pedals, and you'll get it within 3 to 5 days maximum. It's really, really fast because I have stock in the US as well. So yeah, definitely take me up on that. Click that box that you'll see on some of the products, then the price reduces to make it sort of like the street price in the US as well. So I'm keeping it consistent. It's going really well, and I've still got a lot more to do, and I've got a lot more to learn about what to get and what not to buy and all that kind of stuff and who to deal with. It's been great dealing with the American companies. They've been really good. I'm getting some Australian made pedals on there pretty soon too, which is awesome. So some of my favorite Aussie pedals, like the Dazzatronics pedals, I'm looking at getting those. And there's a new company that's coming out that I've been beta testing one of their pedals and giving him feedback. We're looking at getting that up on there as well pretty soon. I have more VFE pedals coming as well. Lots of good stuff. And yeah, it's just been really cool to give this a shot. And hopefully I'm not pushing it on everybody too much on Facebook. You know, it's what I do. I do YouTube and I have the shop now. That's kind of where my focus is. And I'd like to just thank everybody again for being a part of that and supporting it. No matter where you are in the world, like I said, I've had customers in everywhere so far, New Zealand, Australia, the United States and Canada. None in the UK yet. So I'm wondering if there's some sort of import thing that I don't know about with the UK. So if there is, definitely keep me posted or let me know about that. I'll see what I can do. So that's about it for the first podcast. Thank you for listening. And if you want to find me anywhere online, you can go to intheblues.com.au or you can go to youtube.com/intheblues or search for In The Blues on Facebook, which is facebook.com/intheblues. My name's Shane. Thanks for listening. Let me know what you think of the podcast, whether or not it's a good idea or not. It'll be available on iTunes as well as on YouTube in different sections. So thanks for listening, and I will catch you all soon. See ya.